Welcome to the Deep Dive.
Great to be here.
Today, we're really getting into a very intense moment in history. April 1975, we're talking about the fall of Cambodia and South Vietnam.
Yeah, a really turbulent time. And our focus, drawn from this great YouTube source, Episode 5, Escape to Utapau, on the Military Tales channel.
Featuring Roger Youngblood, a pilot right in the thick of it.
Exactly. And that episode really dives into the evacuation efforts, trying to get aircraft, people, everything out to Thailand.
It's an incredible story of determination, maybe desperation too, but definitely trying to salvage something from the chaos.
Absolutely. The source, Escape to Utapau, it just throws you right in. You see how formal structures just collapse.
An individual initiative had to take over. Resourcefulness was everything.
Completely. So where do we start? Roger Youngblood's background, maybe? How did he end up there?
Yeah, okay. So he mentions volunteering for A1 Sky Raiders. This was after a year flying, what did he call them, trash haulers in Vietnam.
Right. Shows he wanted something more involved, maybe? He mentions wanting to fly SAR, search and rescue, the Sandy missions.
High-stakes stuff. Looking for downed pilots.
Definitely speaks to his character. Then General Aderholt comes into the picture. A key figure.
Huge figure in this. Aderholt needed experienced A1 pilots to transition to being T-28 instructor pilots over in Thailand.
And Youngblood puts his hand up again, which led to him spending a whole year at the Defense Language Institute.
Learning Thai, that's quite the commitment, isn't it?
It really is. And, you know, looking back, that Thai language skill, it probably proved invaluable later on, given everything that happened. A bit of foresight there.
No kidding. Okay, so he gets to Thailand, and he gets involved with this AU-24 Peacemaker program.
Which is part of a bigger thing called Incredible Chase, based out of Eglin Air Force Base.
Right. Incredible Chase. What was the idea behind that program?
Well, it was about developing these specialized counterinsurgency aircraft.
Yeah.
The AU-23, which Youngblood flew, and the AU-24. They were meant for, you know, close air support in places where maybe fancy jets weren't the right tool.
More rugged, adaptable.
Exactly. Built for rougher environments. Youngblood ends up at Lop Buri in Thailand, the second wing. And they get this, he's the only American pilot there with his engine mechanic.
Just the two of them. Wow.
Yeah, highlights how specialized this stuff was. And then his job, training Cambodian pilots on the AU-23.
And the training he describes, it sounds pretty wild.
It does. Flying at 3,000 feet. Banking 30 degrees and basically shoot at anything that moves. His words.
Yikes. It speaks to the urgency, I guess. Maybe the experience level of the trainees.
Or maybe both. A desperate need to get pilots operational fast. You got to wonder about the training effectiveness, but that was the reality.
And then there's that story about training the pilot who didn't speak English.
Oh, yeah. Relying on a CIA translator who spoke French to translate into Cambodian. I mean, the communication chain alone.
And Youngblood's line, if he doesn't understand it, bong, and I got the airplane, just sums up the improvisation.
Totally. Language barriers, cultural differences, immense pressure, just making it work somehow.
He also talks about the plane itself, the AU-23. It's basically a Pilatus Porter, right?
That's the one. Known for its style L capabilities, short takeoff and landing.
He mentions an incredibly low stall speed, like 42 knots.
Yeah, which means it can fly super slow without falling out of the sky. Very forgiving. And that style wall ability lets it use tiny, unprepared airstrips. Think bush pilots in Alaska, he says.
Capabilities that would definitely come in handy later.
No doubt. But ironically, that whole incredible chase program, it got canceled.
Right. Why was that? Just the situation deteriorating too fast.
That's likely it. The strategic priorities just shifted dramatically. Long-term counterinsurgency plans went out the window when, you know, survival and evacuation became the only things that mattered.
Which brings us right back to the main event in Escape to Utapau, the evacuation itself. Youngblood gives a lot of credit to General Aderholt for planning ahead, especially in Cambodia.
Aderholt seems to have had remarkable foresight there. Youngblood says about 90 aircraft were flown out of Cambodia successfully because of that planning.
A stark contrast to Vietnam, wasn't it?
Completely. Aderholt apparently tried to get the U.S. ambassador in Saigon to do something similar, set up an aircraft evacuation plan, but no dice.
And the scene in Saigon, as Youngblood describes it, just pure chaos, a Wild West show.
Yeah, the Escape to Utapau video really conveys that pandemonium. Order just dissolved, everyone scrambling for a way out.
Stories are just incredible. Families packed into tiny observation planes like O-1s.
Or A-37s, little jets. And that account of a Vietnamese A-37 pilot landing on a highway. Just imagine.
Desperation. And for many of these planes fleeing Vietnam, a key spot became Trat. In Thailand.
Right, Trat. Not a major base, just a 4,000-foot grass strip.
But it became this crucial diversion point, didn't it, for aircraft that were low on fuel or just couldn't make it to the bigger base at Utapau?
Exactly. An unexpected lifeline. Shows that adaptability again.
Yeah.
Using whatever was available.
And Youngblood was there at Trat. He shares some really moving stories. Rescuing refugees, he mentions a four-day-old baby.
Wow.
And a 94-year-old woman who managed to bring her pet goldfish with her.
Oh, man. The goldfish. It's those little human details, isn't it? They just stick with you. Reminds you these are real people, losing everything, clinging to whatever they could.
Absolutely. Okay, so after that initial frantic wave, things shift slightly. General Aderholt has another mission for Youngblood, and another pilot, Jack Drummond.
And this is where the title Escape to Utapau really comes into focus, right?
Exactly. They're tasked with retrieving abandoned A1 Sky Raiders, 11 of them sitting at Utapau Air Base.
Audacious is a good word for it. These were valuable planes, sure, but retrieving them under those circumstances.
And their condition. Youngblood says they were sitting in bar ditches filled with water from the monsoon rains.
Not exactly ideal storage conditions for complex aircraft. Corrosion, electrical problems. You'd expect them to be write-offs.
But Aderholt wanted them saved. Youngblood credits a Chief Master Sergeant Day and a Navy crew chief with actually getting some of them working.
Incredible effort from the ground crews. Just getting them flyable must have been a huge task.
And then Youngblood and Drummond actually fly them. They take four A1s from Utapau to another base, Tockley.
Get this, though. They did it with no maintenance records, no checklists. They didn't even know if the ejection seats worked or if the guns were loaded or safe.
It's unbelievable. Just pure flying skill and maybe some hope. Youngblood mentions 16 blades and prey.
That sums it up. Relying entirely on their deep knowledge of the A1, it's incredibly risky. A total breakdown of normal procedures born out of necessity.
He paints this picture of taxiing out for takeoff and seeing Jolly Green rescue helicopters sitting on standby. A pretty sobering sight.
Yeah, a reminder of the constant danger. And then Drummond has that scare on the first takeoff. His gear starts retracting on the ground run.
Heart-stopping moment. Must have made them second-guess everything.
You'd think so. But they pressed on. Shows incredible nerve, really. Trusting the machine, trusting themselves.
Thankfully, Youngblood's takeoff was okay. They managed the formation flight to Tuckley, handed the Sky Raiders over to the Thai Air Force.
Mission accomplished. For those four, anyway.
And he tells that funny story about the C-12 crew overhearing them on the radio.
Oh, yeah. What was that?
Apparently, the C-12 crew heard Youngblood and Drummond casually discussing how to actually operate certain systems on the A-1 while they were flying them.
No way. Just figuring it out on the fly.
Pretty much. The C-12 guys were apparently astonished. It just highlights how unconventional the whole thing was.
Completely. You don't normally hear pilots workshopping the checklist mid-flight in formation.
He also mentioned seeing piles of confiscated weapons at Utapau, just stacks of them. A real visual of the war's end right there.
A tangible sign of the surrender and the chaos.
And there was that encounter with a Strategic Air Command Lieutenant Colonel.
Uh-oh. Bureaucracy meets improvisation.
Kind of. This SAC officer apparently questioned Youngblood and Drummond's authority to even be near, let alone fly, these A1s.
Huh. You can imagine the scene. Here they are, risking their necks on a high-priority, if unofficial, mission, and someone's worried about the paperwork.
Classic military moment, even in a crisis.
Exactly. But in the end, the higher-ups did step in. Further retrieval flights for the remaining A1s were stopped.
State Department and the Thai government got involved, right? Political sensitivities, probably.
Yeah, the Tatis were in a tricky spot, hosting all these unexpected guests and aircraft. The U.S. had to tread carefully.
Makes sense. Balancing asset recovery with diplomacy.
But the story of these planes, especially those first four, doesn't quite end at Tockley. And there's a great article that documented this whole thing.
Right. Colonel Rolf Wetterhahn's piece in Air and Space magazine from 97 called Escape to Utapau, his spelling of Utapau. Utapau, yeah. It adds more detail and corroborates Youngblood's account. And it tells us what happened next to those retrieved A1s.
And Wetterhahn apparently uncovered the story of the 11th A1, the one Youngblood didn't retrieve.
That's right. An A1E model flown out of Tonle Sap, Cambodia, by a Vietnamese pilot with 16 people crammed inside.
16 people in a Sky Raider. That's almost impossible to imagine.
Sheer desperation. They apparently landed on some small island POW camp before eventually managing to reach Thailand. Just an incredible feat of survival.
Unbelievable story. Really shows the human drive to escape.
So back to the four A1s sitting at Takhli. General Aderholt wasn't done with them. He then starts this whole campaign to formally acquire them from the Thais.
Which must have been a bureaucratic nightmare. Whose planes were they, legally? South Vietnam didn't exist anymore.
Exactly. Dealing with assets of a defunct government, Aderholt's persistence here is something else.
How did he even manage it?
Well, first, he apparently negotiated with the commander of a South Vietnamese A-37 squadron, who were also refugees in Thailand, to get the A-1s refurbished using refugee pilots and mechanics.
Wow. Resourceful again, using the skills available right there.
Then came the journey, getting these big planes from Takhli, which is inland, to the port of Bangkok.
How'd they do that? Fly them?
No. By truck. And then by barges down the Chao Phraya River.
Barges? Down the river? You're kidding.
Not kidding. Imagine seeing A1 Sky Raiders floating down the river past Bangkok. And then the final step.
Let me guess. Something equally improbable.
Aderholt hired a Russian trawler to ship the four A1s back to the United States.
A Russian trawler? In 1975, during the Cold War. That's amazing. You really can't make this stuff up. It just underlines Aderholt's sheer tenacity, whatever it takes.
And those four A1s, they made it back. Where did they end up?
Well, their fates are pretty cool. One is now at the Smithsonian's National Air and Space Museum.
Wow. Okay.
Another went to the Kavanaugh Flight Museum in Texas. A third is privately owned, I think, in Colorado.
And the fourth.
The fourth is apparently the one that was actually flown in for the event where Roger Youngblood gave the talk featured in the Escape to Utapau video.
No way. So a direct flying link right back to that crazy mission in 75. That's fantastic.
Yeah, these planes aren't just museum pieces. They're survivors carrying that history.
The video also briefly touches on Youngblood's career after all this drama.
Right. He went on to fly A-7s and then the A-10 Warhawk.
An aircraft he seems to still really believe in.
You hear that from a lot of pilots who flew it. He also ended up back in Thailand later, working for JSMAG, the Joint U.S. Military Advisory Group.
Flying C-12s even into Hanoi post-war, his career really saw some history unfold.
It certainly did. From the end of Vietnam through the Cold War, flying some iconic planes.
So wrapping this up, this deep dive into Episode 5, Escape to Utapau, and the events surrounding it, it's just an incredible slice of history.
It really is. The A-1 retrieval is this specific, amazing story, but it sits within that bigger, chaotic picture of the fall of Southeast Asia.
And the themes that jump out are just resourcefulness, sheer determination, the absolutely critical importance of the human element when everything else is falling apart.
Definitely. It shows how individual actions, decisive leadership like Aderholt, can make a huge difference against overwhelming odds. It's about resilience, really.
So, a final thought for you listening. Just take a moment to consider the kind of pressure people like Youngblood and Aderholt were under, the split-second decisions, the risks, the uncertainty. What does it mean to act, to be resourceful, when the script gets thrown out and the world seems to be collapsing around you?
Yeah, something to chew on. It's easy to look back now, but living through it, making those calls. That's something else entirely.
A powerful story and well worth exploring further if you get the chance. Thanks for joining us on The Deep Dive.
My pleasure. Fascinating stuff.